You're listening to The Alex Jones Show. From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
That's the amazing sound score from Beowulf that this guy made. What a great animated film. I love it. Roger Avery is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. And there we are. We are Beowulf. That's from years ago. And Roger Avery reposted. So he's here with us. I got so much to talk to him about here. And I want to get into predictive programming and movies and you know, all of it, the stuff he wants to get into. But obviously, I was already a fan of yours, followed your work, didn't know you were aware of my show and liked it. And then I see you on Joe Rogan, and I kind of watch it, listen in the car and here and there. And I said, I got to just get on the treadmill and watch the whole thing. And I did. Lost probably 5 pounds doing it. But just amazing, because everything you were saying, I mean, I knew was accurate, and almost no one else is saying it. But then I wanted you to be able to go on with more about how you knew it. So back to what I said at the start of the interview, and you went off into Linklater, which was great in real filmmaking.
But, yeah, sorry about that.
But no, it was great. No, I'm glad we did it, because I've experienced it, you know, lived it. So it's my own experience. You kind of answered. You said, you know, early on, you were just approaching it from your own perspective, hadn't been in the deep end yet. But how did you learn about predictive programming? How did you learn about the Satanism? How did you, and then now you're on the biggest show in the world, Joe Rogan, talking about it. I mean, that was a big move. I mean, or maybe you talked about it before. What's the process there?
Well, I mean, several things happen. A lot of it is a lot of these. I mean, there were a number of WikiLeaks dumps that that occurred, and one of them was about Sony Pictures. And I started investigating and reading all of the documents that were suddenly available, and it was like suddenly I realized, oh, like why didn't anybody tell me that's what the film industry is? And it was one of those things I always kind of I think I understood, like. You know, one can think of Hollywood as being the propaganda wing of our government. But something happened over the course of, and it was probably during the Biden presidency, where I started, looking around and I started, realizing that there was this kind of echo chamber in Hollywood. And I just definitely was not part of that. And then this most recent revelation with all of the Epstein papers coming out, and I started reading those as well, and then with what happened with COVID, and I had been working on a script about this virologist in Manitoba, in Winnipeg. And I was writing a screenplay about her, and she's a Chinese virologist who was the person who had developed the inoculations for leprosy. And it was a huge success, big, huge success. You know, Chinese company is manufacturing all that stuff in California. And I was writing a story kind of about, what it's like to be a rock star, and you have a hit, and then you're looking for your next hit. And I started noticing that, and there was all these articles that have since been, somewhat suppressed. I think it was in the Winnipeg Free Press, where or City Press, and where she had been caught by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police shipping various copyrighted viruses, like Hanta and all of them.
Which, by the way, appeared to be souped up versions.
Yeah, souped up versions, and they were shipping them directly from Winnipeg to Wuhan on Air Canada freight. And then the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, there's all the, they have to, everything's published, but they've redacted who her financier was. And when I started doing the research on it, I realized, well, it's one of three people, and those guys are the obvious people who you would think. And then suddenly I started realizing this is really nefarious. And then when COVID hit and they left the Kowloon Bridge open on purpose, during Chinese New Year when this was happening, just kind of allowing everybody to flow out. All the stuff that was happening during that time, it was like, this is intentional. This is, The first time it's happenstance, the second time it's coincidence, the third time it's enemy attack. And I started realizing, oh, we're under enemy attack. And then the way our own local California government was behaving at that time, how they were quarantining people on army bases, but then allowing people to go in and out of those quarantine areas. It was almost like no one is that stupid. And that was her. And so I was writing a script about her. And so I started realizing no one is that stupid. This is intentional. We're intentionally doing this. And then everything just kind of, and look at this ridiculousness that we went through as a culture. And this was so, it hammered on us and damaged us so badly. And then I started realizing, because I'm a movie guy, that, you know, that there were clues. There was the Soderbergh movie that had come out, Contagion, where basically they are talking about is it cautionary? Are they cautioning us that this is going to happen? Or are they preparing us that it's going to happen through revelation of the method?
And then the documents come out that it was psychological warfare run by the defense ministries, Canada, the U.S., the U.K., to scare us to create this new civilization, to train us for carbon lockdowns in the future. So you, like many others, were already somewhat awake. But COVID and all of it, with what you already knew, was so obvious, and now it's confirmed, that pushed you over the edge. And they thought Disease X and all their Rockefeller documents going back 30 years would bring in their world government. Instead, they now admit at Davos, it's destroyed them, it's discredited them, no one believes anything they say now.
Yeah, and thank God. I mean, this was an attack on the people. And I'm one of those people. And so when I, you know, when I kind of realized this and what was going on, and then I started looking around and, you know, all my friends and everybody, they're all just happily getting shots, you know, and now they're just dying left and right. And so when this started happening, I started, I think, forming a much heavier distrust of authority. And then I started thinking about it. I started looking at various movies and seeing the patterns and how it happened. And I think the one that I mentioned on Joe Rogan was Fight Club, made by, you know, a guy who's a commercial director. They hired a guy who makes commercials to make a big commercial that is effectively selling what's going to happen. And the movie itself is a manifesto. You know, it's a manifesto about bringing down the financial system, and, you know, the buildings all collapse. And when you look at what happened 1 year after Fight Club came out, it was 9/11. And then you start looking at, well, who produced Fight Club? And that was Arnon Milchan. And Arnon has openly admitted, this is not me saying it, this is him saying it, that, you know, he's a Mossad guy. He's a Mossad agent. And that, and an arms dealer. That's what Fincher used to call him, was, my movie was produced by an arms dealer, like jokingly. And so then I start looking at Arnon Milchan's other movies. And he did this movie called Medusa Touch with George C. Scott. I think Lee Remick is in it. And in that movie, again, airplanes are crashing into buildings. And I think I mentioned on Joe Rogan that at one point very early in my career, I had been through John Milius brought in on a little DOD weekend where we were all going to get together, and they got a bunch of writers together, and they put us in a little tiny ballroom type thing in Long Beach. And we all wrote scenarios for how to attack Los Angeles under the guise of this is if we come up with ideas on how to attack Los Angeles, we can come up with preventions for it, which sounds good to me. But I was young and naive at that time. And as I look back on that, I realize how nefarious that was. And now,
by the way, because I remember articles 20 years ago that even came out, I'm kind of jumping the gun, I don't know if this is what you say you're saying, where it turned out they were telling top writers, maybe it had been you they're talking about, at these DOD-funded camps where you thought you were fighting terror, that they were actually going to use that for scenarios for training and or false flags.
That's exactly what it was. And so I was, when I started putting all this together in my head and realizing what a useful idiot I had been, throughout much of my career.
They got a top writer, one of the best in the world, for free, writing them scripts for stuff they want to either psychologically say or do.
Yeah, effectively for free. And so that was kind of like a third eye opened up in my head, and I started realizing all of this. And this was also at a time where I started approaching my faith in a much deeper way, and my belief in God in a much deeper way. Like, there it is, 9/11. So this is the revelation of the method. Where
2 years before, they did it on The Simpsons and everywhere.
And
people ask how I predicted it. It was a lot of things in the media saying Bin Laden's going to hit us and all this. I knew the FBI had helped bomb the World Trade Center in 92. I'd interviewed Ahmad Salam. So I had all this data. But then I started having nightmares of the towers on fire being blown up. And it was the collective unconscious. It wasn't that my unconscious was more powerful than my conscious. So I just said, they're going to blow the World Trade Center. They're going to blame Bin Laden. They're going to fly planes into it. And I didn't even know that right around the time I was doing that, because I didn't watch a lot of TV, they had a lone gunman X-Files reboot where the government hijacks a jumbo jet, a small group, to fly to the World Trade Center to go to war in the Middle East, in Afghanistan. And then I got a few years later contacted by Chris Carter, by some of the people on the show, never met him in person, but talked to him email on the phone. And they said, listen, the CIA came to us at parties and said sometimes, you ought to do a story on this. So instead of Chris Carter writing a story for them, they came and gave him the idea. And people, when I talked about it, said, that's a lie. They talked to Carter and he goes, no, Alex Jones is a good guy. He's not a racist like they say. This is like 2016. He goes, and that did happen. So, again, how crazy is that?
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, it seems like a lot of people, when you get to a certain level, you start having a handler. You start having a CIA handler. And I got to know mine. And he's a pretty nice guy.
Wow, tell me about this. Tell us about this.
Well, I'll tell you about this and other things. I mean, once you befriend people of power, let's say, and you start getting on people's radar, at a certain point, it's like, you know what? It doesn't cost anything. Let's put somebody on Avery and let's watch him and just make sure that, Avery is, remaining in his predefined frame and not deviating too far from it. And so I there's a group of guys actually, and to begin with, and you get to know these people, and for a while I was paranoid about it, but then I kind of got used to it, and I realized that I don't know if I'm still on any list, but or need to be watched. Probably more recently I am, but I get calls from him every now and then, advising me on stuff. And saying, hey, you might not want to talk about this. Why not talk about this instead? And and stuff like that. And
I remember former NSA and CIA. What was his name? Michael Hayden, in a speech like 10 years ago, goes, we don't spy on bad people. We spy on interesting people.
Yeah, well, and they told me at one point, look, don't try to lose us because frequently your surveillance will be there to protect you. And he gave me a scenario where this had happened once, where some guy got jumped by a gang and they had to move in to protect their, because they're surveilling.
No, I had the CIA try that with me. They're like, hey, your wife's cheating on you. Here's the hotel. And I'm just like, and I go there and it's happening. I'm like, God, they're like, we want to help you now. See how the surveillance is good?
But
I'm out of control, folks. But this is how it works. We're here to serve you. Yeah.
And it's all part of soft power control. I got invited to this dinner that was being thrown by a bunch of like the Palantir guys. And, I go to this, meal in a private club and in a private room, big private room with a banquet table. And, there's all the people you would imagine would be there. Oh, like there's the Top Gun guys and, there's so-and-so and there's this director. And I was thinking, why am I here? And basically they got up and they made a very good speech, which was, what happened to, and it was actually Shyam Sankar, the CTO of Palantir, got up and basically made a plea, what happened to the American cinematic universe? And he was, he wrote an essay about this called The American Cinematic Universe. What happened to The Hunt for Red October, you know, Die Hard? These movies that were supportive, you know, one could say of, you know, Die Hard supportive of law enforcement, even though it kind of makes fun of the FBI and even though it's making fun of like kind of the goofiness of the LAPD and stuff like that, it looks at the individuals of law enforcement and it makes them the heroes of the movie.
It humanizes them.
It humanizes them. And then you look at Hunt for Red October, and it's about a CIA analyst who basically has to like drops himself into the Arctic Ocean to be able to board the submarine so that he can like, you know, help stop nuclear war because they're trying to create this handshake between the Russians and the Americans through Sean Connery's submarine captain turning over this submarine. So this is like, and it's a Tom Clancy, I think it's a Tom Clancy novel. And so, you know, this is Hollywood doing what Hollywood did best, which
by the way, I knew the CIA manager that gave them the classified info on real things that happened that's based on, that's Steve Pachinik.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it's all of his stuff is based on actual documents and, you know, these scenarios and stuff like that that they read. And so, you know, and so their plea was like, look, we're gathering everybody together because this is what we want to do. We want to regain soft power because somewhere along the way, soft power got co-opted and taken control over by this other group. And, you know, I have a very powerful director friend who I'm very close to, who kind of was laughing about it. And he said, I said, there's probably a dinner going on in some other room somewhere else in Los Angeles with another group. And they're trying to do the opposite. And he laughed and he said, oh, you mean like knocking over the apple cart, you know, playfully. And yeah, and so that's when I suddenly realized, oh, my God, there's all these power groups attempting to control narrative. I mean, I always thought movies were just movies.
But oh, that's why really I was told is, when the richest guy in the world at the time, through a whole nother meeting about lawsuits, like 8 years ago, got me to this thing on this high rise, like Howard Beale Network, and they're in there, and it was off record, so I won't say the names. And they're like, listen, we're actually a good group. We want you to work with us, and we'll fix all this. Of course, it was all BS, but it's the same spiel. They're like, we're worried because you keep controlling narratives. We want you to do our narratives. I'm like, no. They said, well, get ready to be sued. And that's what happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all about narrative control, and it's all about capturing the audience and then programming them because people are very simple. And you can, and I think the data was that like a third of the population, and it's probably more now that COVID has happened and fried everybody's pineal gland, calcified it, and everybody's like has limited thinking powers anymore. And it's changed people, but they basically have said, now you can control about a third or more now of the audience. Because people are just very basic. They're monkey see, monkey do. If you tell them, if you program them to believe, for example, men or women and or a bunch of the DEI stuff, they'll believe it. If you tell them, if you put a non-binary couple, couple on screen, they'll believe it. They'll imitate it. And so you do this enough and people will imitate it. If you put a nuclear family on screen, people will imitate it.
And they're giving us stuff that destroys civilization. And that's the thing is, they've broken the social contract to make us more controllable. Like you said, about a third of people are literally robots. We're worried about a robot takeover. We already have it with humans that have become basically robots.
Yeah, yeah. And people will, you know, argue for things that are completely illogical. And it's unreal, actually, how people behave. Have I frozen?
No, you're back. You're great. Listen, this is incredible. Please continue okay, on. We're so blessed to have you. It's amazing, Roger. Roger,
and let's... So I saw this movie recently that really pissed me off called Civil War. It was a movie by this British dude, Alex.
Let's
Garland.
Do this, Roger. This is so important.
Alex's,
this is so important. Let's reconnect right now. And look, we've got the whole next hour. If you can do it, at least 30 minutes, I want you to. We're going to reconnect with you right now. This has been amazing quality until now. It's actually frozen, and your audio is starting to go out. So let's reconnect with Roger Avery right now. This is you're getting exclusive top Hollywood writer, you know, top producer, top director, like creme de la creme. Is telling you all this as he's waking up to it, and we're all waking up to it. I'm telling what's happened to me, and I told a personal story that is embarrassing and true. And it's happened other stuff like that. It's like, it's crazy. And they're watching everything I do, and then it's like, unknown number, hey, we're going to send you a link to this hotel. Here it is. Go there. Boom. It's true. And I'm just like, wow. They're like, yeah, we're your friends. Exactly what they told him. And how do you say no to that? I have, but it's like, it's this, it's like God, basically. It's not the equivalent, but like a sub thing. It's like, well, you guys got magic powers. No, they have this surveillance grid. And boy, can it do a lot of stuff for you if you're in the club. You see, and people, a lot of people will go, well, I want to be in this club then. I'm gonna do this right now. I mean, my God. But that's what finally pissed Snowden off, is his CIA handler was watching him and his wife bang and telling him about it. And oh, yeah, your wife's mad at you right now. And it's just like, that's not your right to do that. And now it's come out that, of course, the Meta glasses, whatever AI flags, they have to watch. And so they have contractors in Kenya watching dudes on the toilet have sex with their wife, you know, spanking their kids, whatever. And like, what do you think these things are? It's a Palantir. It's a crystal ball. It's two way. Whenever Gandalf walks in and Saruman has got a Palantir, he goes, what are you doing? Sauron can see us through this. He goes, why should we be scared to use it? And the point is, there's this godlike power now, and that's what you're talking about. Please continue. But when did you, with Rogan, click to the your analysis of the spell we're under, the mind control, the Satanism?
Well, it was when I started reading the Epstein documents and I started seeing what was inside of them, and I was shocked and I couldn't believe it. And I started telling people and people don't want to hear it. And so then I went on Rogan and I talked about it, and I talked about, you know, these revelations of the elites at a very high level. And we actually know the basic number of them as well are doing human trafficking, human rape and human sacrificing of children because they're the closest to God. And when I like read this, I mean, it's unthinkable. Like, you don't want to believe it. And so I mentioned it on Joe Rogan, but I also mentioned that I was starting an AI company. And what shocked me is after the show, more people wanted to talk about the AI thing, and more people were upset about, you know, that I was starting an AI company than they were about, you know, this nightmare of elites eating babies. And so then I started thinking about why is this happening? Well, like, and I mean, we've seen people who have spoken about it, who have, you know, been who have participated in it and who have left. You know, it's a kind of it's an initiation that you go through to become a confidence initiation that you go through to become part of a team. And that's when I realized that this is not something that's unique to the elites, that human nature involves these kinds of hazing initiations, or else we wouldn't see it happening since childhood. Like a bunch of boys get together and kill a squirrel or something. If you're not part of that group, if you're the one kid who's not part of it, and you don't, and you recognize that it's morally wrong, and you separate yourself from that group, you are now outside of that group. If you're in a fraternity and you don't go through the hazing initiation, which, you know, who knows what that is, you are now outside of that group.
If you don't screw the pig or the goat, you're not in the club.
You know, there was a really great movie. In fact, it's my favorite Ridley Scott movie of recent memory. It's the only movie of his that I really, of recent, you know, of his recent films, of his last four or five movies, that I really, really liked.
Hold on, stay there. A 2 minute break, Roger Avery. Next hour coming up. Please stay with us.
I'll tell you about it right afterwards.
Yes, sir. Again, amazing interview. You got a top writer, top director here telling you out the cow ate the cabbage. Ed Avery on X, Avery.com. Back in 2 minutes. Everybody, you know, tune in now. This is important. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know the power of turmeric, but have you felt it? Have you tried the ultimate turmeric gummies, the delicious way to harness the ancient power of golden turmeric, supercharged with ginger root and black pepper for maximum impact? Each gummy delivers 125 milligrams of premium turmeric extract packed with curcumin, the clinically studied compound shown to support healthy inflammation response, ease everyday aches, and promote joint comfort so you can move through life with ease. We added real ginger root, trusted for centuries to calm digestion and soothe the stomach, plus a precise dose of black pepper extract with pepperine, proven to boost curcumin absorption by up to 2,000%. That means more of the good stuff actually gets where your body needs it. No capsules, no bitter aftertaste, just one tasty tropical-flavored gummy a day, or two if you're feeling extra, to help you feel lighter, looser, and more energized. Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, ancient wisdom meets modern science in the best-tasting form possible. Grab yours today and start feeling the ultimate difference in health. With Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, inflammation doesn't stand a chance. Get yours today at the Alex Jones Store.